Look, payday's awesome, but running payroll, calculating taxes and deductions, staying compliant, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is a simple online payroll and benefits tool built for small businesses like yours. Gusto gets your team paid while automatically filing your payroll taxes. Plus, you can offer benefits like 401k, health insurance, and workers' comp, and it makes onboarding new employees a breeze. We love it so much, we really do use it ourselves, and we have 4 years, and I personally recommend you give it a try, no matter how small your business is. And to sweeten the deal, just for listening today, you also get 3 months free. Go to gusto.com/beingboss, that's gusto.com/beingboss. Welcome to Being Boss, a podcast for creatives, business owners, and entrepreneurs who want to take control of their work and live life on their own terms. I'm your host, Emily Thompson, and in this episode, I'm joined again by my friend Dana Kay to chat about hiring, knowing when, for what role, and how to figure out who to best fill it. You can find all the tools, books, and links we reference on the show notes at www.beingboss.club. And if you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this show and share us with a friend. All right, bosses, it's time to add another podcast to your queue. Let me introduce you to The Shine Online, hosted by Natasha, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. Natasha recently did an episode I know so many of you will want to make a mad dash for, as it's become a common topic in the Being Boss community. It's called Why You're Burned Out on Social Media and a Solution. And if that's not your jam, Natasha's interviews and conversations about entrepreneurship, mental health, and the art of shining online will certainly have something to fit your fancy. Learn more and listen to The Shine Online wherever you get your podcasts. Dana Kay is a lifelong entrepreneur who believes in the power of storytelling and authentic personal branding. In 2009, she founded Kay Publicity, Inc., a literary public relations agency. Known for her innovative ideas and knowledge of current trends, she coaches her clients on how to identify and establish their unique personal brands. In 2016, Dana launched Midwest Mystery Conference, formerly Murder and Mayhem in Chicago, a one-day conference dedicated to crime fiction with mystery author Laura Ryder Day. She is also the author of 2 books, Your Book, Your Brand, The Step-by-Step Guide to Launching Your Book and Boosting Your Sales, and The Personal Brand Workbook. And she serves on the advisory board of Propel PR. Dana, welcome back to Being Boss. So glad to see you again.
Long time no see.
Right? If you are unfamiliar, we had Dana on a couple of episodes ago. I actually just had this pulled up. You were in episode 323. This one, I think, as of recording is, let's see, 336. So you can go back 13 episodes ago. We had Dana on to have the conversation that we're here to have today, because that one, it didn't take like a wild turn or anything, but I feel like there was so much more setup that needed to happen. So we dove into Dana's building of her company, how she has grown her team in the way that she has, how she's transitioned from being a doer into a manager, all of those things in that episode, which really sets us up for this episode, which is really around knowing who to hire and for what, and how to create a company culture that people want to stay and work in. So thanks, number one, for that conversation, and number two, for coming back to have this one.
I will talk about team anytime. It's such a challenge for so many of us. I think, you know, in our weekly C-suite calls, I'm pretty sure that every week there's at least one team conversation happening. And so if I can share my experiences and what I've learned and help other bosses avoid any pitfalls, I'm always game to do it.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, you're right. We talk about this all the time. Like, team stuff is always a part of the conversation. And, you know, it is within the context of the C-suite, but it also is with like every business owner that I know who has started building any kind of team. And so this is, you know, your first VA who you just contract for a couple hours a month to, you know, start handing off some tasks to. It could be, you know, you're hiring a social media manager, you're hiring your first sort of consultant. Like, it starts in those places and it moves into your first part-time employee, your first full-time employee. You're like 12-person team, whatever it may be. Once you take that first step, growing and managing your team and, you know, creating the environment in which they can work and get their stuff done and all of these things, it becomes a major part of what we as literal bosses in this situation and what it is that we do. So I do what I really want to illustrate, I think, with today's episode. I feel like we dove into this a lot in that previous episode, but here it's really about the intentionality that goes into choosing the right people that makes that part easier and better and more effective and all of those things. So I'm excited to dive in.
And you're in a season of hiring too, so I think you'll have lots to share as well.
Oh my God, so many people. Indeed. So I hired someone this week. I'm doing more interviews over the next 2 weeks. Indeed, I am. Let's see where this goes. Because there's also an interesting sort of dichotomy happening here between the two of us where, and I, this has been how I've traditionally worked, but hiring professionals, which is what you do. And you talked about that a lot in the last episode. And that's something that I have done, obviously, also in the past. But as we have grown the Almanac store in particular, I'm hiring a lot of college kids. Mm-hmm. And so it's a whole different, it is a whole different ball game. Let's start with knowing when to hire. I would love from, if you can even remember your first hire, like what that was like and how you knew when it was time and how that has evolved into where you are today. How do you now know when it is time to hire?
So I did make my first hire really early. I made my first hire within the first year of business. Mm-hmm. Don't know if that was good, bad, right time or not, but At that point, I felt like I was taking on too much and I couldn't do it all myself. That was the point. And so I hired an assistant, which in hindsight, I think that a lot of us will hire, we think that that's the first hire we need to make, right? We think of all the low-level stuff, like the managing the calendar, the inputting receipts, like all the data entry stuff. We think, okay, that's the first place we need to hire. And maybe it is. In hindsight, I actually don't think that that was the first thing I needed to hire. I actually think I needed to get more systems in place and I actually needed to get software and get other, you know, computer stuff versus a person. But I think my first hire was an assistant. She was part-time. She was not good. I was not good. Nothing about it was good. And then from there, I had some assistants and some interns. But I think my first like big full-time hire was seven or eight years into business when I had my first full-time hire. And then I hired a publicist. I hired another person to deliver the work. That might have been, if I had been further along in systematizing how I deliver work, that actually would have been the best hire because I can scale a lot better and a lot more quickly if I have other people who can actually deliver the thing. So our company delivers publicity services. And if I have an assistant assisting me, that's great, but I'm still the one delivering the services. If I have someone else delivering the services, that removes me from a few of our clients. It removes me from several of the processes. And so that's actually what I find to be the best way to scale is once you have your systems in place, once you have a method, our mutual friend Tara McMullen calls it the secret sauce, the way you do business. Once you have that down, hiring other people and teaching other people to do that is a really great way to scale. So now I would say for the past couple of years, that's where the focus has been is hiring people to deliver the thing. So we have several publicists, we have two marketers, we have now we hired a dedicated events person. And those are all people who are dealing with the, they're all client facing. They're the ones delivering the product, delivering the thing, being the face of the campaign. So I don't have to be the face of the campaign. And then now that we're at that point, now we're starting to fill out the, let's call it the back office stuff. So we hired a research assistant. She doesn't deal with clients. She's helping the publicists and helping the marketers, by researching new media outlets, finding new influencers, reviewing inbound media requests. So she's supporting them. And we also have an executive assistant who is the Jill of all trades and kind of helps everybody with everything and is highly organized. So we first started hiring people to deliver on the service. And then now we're starting to fill out with some of those back office things because we don't necessarily want, it adds a level of complication with clients where if I have too many people serving the clients, like that's not good, right? The clients want to have a small team of people. They don't want to be dealing with 10 different people. And so right now we're trying to fill in some of the back office where we can support the client facing folks so they can increase their capacity.
Love it. Okay. I literally totally ate notes. Really important things that I want to hit on because there's so many little nuggets in here that have to be like shown a light on. First, I love that you said your first hire probably should have been software.
Yes.
Because I think that so many people are in exactly this place. So if you are in a place in your business where you feel like it's time to make your first hire, pause for a second and see if there are pieces of technology that you can use to do things faster, better, smarter, or totally automated so that you can have back more time before you go and hire someone else. I think that one is key. Maybe you need bookkeeping software. Maybe you need social media stuff. Maybe you need to check out some AI copywriting. Maybe you need to look at Zapier and sort of creating automations between your things so they talk to each other. I don't even know what it is. I think that is key. And I know that you have become like a automation. You are doing a lot of that. How much of your company now would you say is technology and automations?
You know, it's hard to have a
That's a weird question.
Yeah. But I will say, so this kind of goes back to like knowing when you need to hire, knowing what you need to hire. So one of my favorite activities is when people are getting squeezed, when my team members or myself are feeling squeezed, we track our time. We have Toggle. There's other apps, but we look at our time and I look at where people are spending their time. So I literally will take, you know, Julia's time. I'll sort by duration and look at where she's spending her time. And I start making notes and I look at how much of this can be automated. How much of this does she in particular have to do, or a publicist, let's say we don't want to talk about people, but roles, how much does a publicist have to do? How much can like, could this be done by an assistant? Could it be done by a more entry-level person? And so I start making those lists. And I think if you think it can't be automated, try thinking harder and being creative. Like this is, I think what I love about automations is that you can be so creative and there's no one way to automate something. Like I'll change the trigger or I'll change the flow to accommodate different things. And so like we just, you know, we added a new piece of software that we've been trying out recently and it's great. And then my next step is, okay, how can it integrate? What else can I do? How can I connect it to Asana? How can I connect it to our calendars, whatever it might be? And so I think that the first step is to look at what you're actually doing and what you actually want to offload. And then just ask yourself, can this be a piece of software? So for example, our client onboarding process, we have a lot of steps to onboard a client. Just high level, I have to get them set up in QuickBooks. I have to create their project in Asana. I have to set up their stuff in Toggle. I have to set up their folder in Dropbox. I have to add all their assets to Dropbox. All of that's automated. Of course it is. Because again, you think like, well, how can they just be automated? Well, we created a form in Airtable. So every new client gets a welcome email and they will fill out a form. They fill out a form and it triggers these 10 different things that happen. We tried to get more granular. So again, it doesn't always work. Like I tried to do it something where if they accept the proposal, it automatically generates the email. doesn't work is I have to handpick who I want to assign to the project, all of those things. So you might try some things that to try to automate some things that don't work and you just double back, or you think of a different way to do it. So we can't have an automated email, an automated welcome email, but I do have a template, a Gmail template that I use. So at least I'm not reinventing the wheel every time. So yeah, there's a lot of software that cuts down on our, it doesn't just cut down on like manpower, woman power, we have an all female team. But it does, it also cuts down on any friction or any balls getting dropped. Cause I think that's really the piece. Cause the only reason I'm so on top of things is because of software. I'm not naturally on top of things in any way. I'm laughing because I almost didn't make this interview because I forgot that our son had a half day of school because it wasn't on the calendar. Fortunately, we have an alternate plan. But again, it's like the software is what keeps the balls from getting dropped. It's what keeps us organized. And so I think that anytime you can opt for software, we should, because it reduces human. There's no human error, right?
Yeah. For sure. One of the things, so I know one of the blocks a lot of people have, and I've come up against this with bosses from the very beginning to people who have been in business years, is paying for software thing. We're like, you will get nickel and dime to death. You will have subscriptions, you know, all day long, every day, every month, when another one's coming out. And the way I always, the way I reframe this is that as an employee, if you set things up well and right, then the, you know, $400 a month that you're spending on all of your subscriptions, all the way up to, I feel like being boss ours is probably like $2,000 a month. Like if I really think at a lot of the stuff that we are using for, you know, everything from bookkeeping to social media, like all the way down, probably about $2,000 a month on subscriptions. That's an employee. And that is, and that's like a cheap employee. Really, when you think about it,
and it's way less to have it's way less to have software than it is to have an employee. And software is a lot easier to manage, as we'll discuss.
Indeed, it is. So easier to train if you change setup for training or training for setup, and there is very little management, just sort of checking in and making sure things are doing what they're supposed to do and keeping up with updates. So that's a reframe that I want to make. And I love that you say that, because that is incredibly important. And even as you add people to your team, if these software things are in place, it makes onboarding, it can make it easier and more difficult depending on you know, who it is that you're bringing into a role and how much they're going to be involved with it. But it makes it easier for you to run those pieces of the company that don't need human hands doing it. It can be automated. So first hire can be software. I also love that you mentioned that your first hire was not a good one, because that is everybody. I feel like a lot of people go into that first hire going, you know, I'm not going to get it right. You're right. You're likely not. It's likely not going to be a great scenario. I remember the very first time I hired a VA, it was useless. Like I didn't know how to delegate. I think she may have been a little new to it too. And there was like, it just immediately did not work. I think I paid for 1 month and was like, okay, this is not working. Thank you. Bye. And I got nothing out of it. Like that is going to be, I think, the experience of everyone, unless you are just lucky or have it together or something, in making that first hire, your second, third, fourth, and beyond get better.
Was your first VA, was she a contractor?
Yes.
And that's another lesson learned.
Yeah.
So I think that with my first VA, my office, I had brick and like I had an office. This was in 2009. And so like you're talking about all the systems and tools, like a lot of these systems didn't exist back then. You remember like your tanning salon days and
automations. No such thing.
No. And so we did what we made do with what we had. But I think in hindsight, like hiring a contractor is way lower risk. And when we hired our first VA, when we did go virtual, when we had a virtual assistant, the first one didn't work out. I hired through a service and I came back to the service and I said, I don't think you gave me a seasoned person. I need like a really seasoned person. And so they're like, okay, we got you. And she had been a VA for 10 years, I think been an assistant for 10 years at that point. So I learned a lot from her as, you know, as she was my first virtual assistant about her systems and her tools. And I was, and she was easy to train on our systems and our techniques. So your new hire most likely is you're going to be going for cheap, right? It's most likely going to be like an entry-level person. You're both inexperienced. You've both never done this before. And no wonder it's not going to be super successful. So starting with a contractor and perhaps a subject matter expert can really help with that, because you're new to managing, but they won't be new to working for someone, and they won't be new to the service they're providing.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Next note I made. You started on this a little bit, talking about the difference between hiring some back office help and hiring for you another publicist, like someone who's going to be delivering to clients. One of the things that I always talk about when someone is thinking about really making any hire from their first to their 10th and beyond, is it's easy to think I need someone. I remember having someone literally come into my office very early days of Indy, just file papers, which like totally like that's the furthest back office, right, thing to get someone to come do. But, you know, it was something that I needed done, and I had it done. It was fine. But when it comes to actually making a hire for real, one of the things that I always recommend you think about is getting that person as close as you can to making money in your business, because this is an expense that you are taking on. And that doesn't always mean that you're hiring someone to deliver to the client. Sometimes it is what is the biggest piece they can take off of your plate so that you are closer to making money, or whatever it may be. But that little question of who or what is going to help me make money as opposed to just like clean my desk is a really great sort of reframe for thinking about who it is you're hiring first.
100%. Because I think ultimately a clean desk is nice to have, but you can deal with having papers around. Right?
Yes.
Like it's not going to earn you more money. It's not going to like improve your business substantially. And so I think that getting them closest to the money is a really good frame. And I also think if you're thinking about it in the way like, okay, I'll hire a VA because then I have more time to sell. Well, what happens when you're so good at selling? Like, are you going to be able to deliver on everything?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the next thing to think through. I had coffee with an entrepreneur friend earlier today, and she's like, I think I'm ready to like go on podcasts and really start promoting my business and all these things. And I said, but you just said that you're booked through February. Like, you just told me that you have no time in your calendar. So why do you want to do this? And so thinking about like, if you're going to free up time for yourself, if you're going to make that space to take on more, are you also going to be able to deliver? And maybe it is a two-prong approach of hiring someone to deliver and help free up so you can sell more. You know, the past few years I've been making hires in two. I've been hiring two people at a time. It's great for economy of training. It's great for them to have camaraderie. And it's a lot easier just to fan through a bunch of resumes all at once. But I think looking at if you're going to make this capacity for yourself, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, exactly. And do you have the capacity to follow through with what happens when that's all in place? When was the last time you said, it's almost too easy, when talking about a piece of tech? Probably never, right? Because tech usually isn't easy. Tech is often too complicated, too busy, and too frustrating, especially for us creative types, when it should be just plain easy. HubSpot CRM platform is ridiculously easy to learn, use, and love. That's because it's a handcrafted, sophisticated system designed for the way teams actually work, not a bunch of cobbled together tools that don't actually speak to each other. With a suite of powerful tools that seamlessly connect your teams and customizable hubs that you can add or subtract as you grow, it's not almost too easy to use, it is easy to use, period. Learn how HubSpot can help your business grow better at HubSpot.com. One more thing that I want to address around your initial comments is you didn't really touch on this because you're Dana. And I know that you feel this, but like you did not allude to it in that you went into it thinking, you know, maybe it should have been a publicist, you know, from the get-go. A lot of times I know that bosses will hire someone to file their papers as opposed to being the publicist sitting right next to them, helping them deliver the thing because of this mindset that no one will do it like me. And I just want to say it out loud right here, right now. When I hear a boss say that, whenever I hear anyone say that, that is a red flag baby boss mindset right then and there of like, of you are really like, you got to get over that. Absolutely get over that because you're right to some extent. You're wrong in that sometimes people can do it better than you. And three, that's just part of the process. Mm-hmm. Of getting them in, getting them trained, teaching them all of the things. I like to think about my first real hire and definitely my like long-term hire is Corey. Hi, Corey, who still edits this podcast. Hired Corey 10 years ago. 10 years ago. And I hired him on to start just doing some coding work for me. So I was a web designer and developer. He was my publicist, right? Who to come sit next to me and do the thing. He wasn't doing the big projects that I was doing, but he was doing all of the maintenance stuff. Very green, still in college, knew plenty of things, also was teaching him a lot of things along the way, and is now way better at all of the things than I am. We were just looking at reviewing some website stuff for Almanac, and he was saying words to me I'd never heard before.
Love that.
Right? And so getting someone in to do the thing with you, to do it and allow them to become better than you starts with you getting them in to do the things that only you can do in this moment. And everything can be replicated by someone else.
There's nothing that delights me more than me learning from my team.
Yes.
If my team teaches me something, or if I come in and say, this is how we do it, and they were like, well, actually, Dana, you're wrong, and this is why. I love that because it Same. Means we're getting better. It means we're getting better.
Yeah. And we're getting better. Like, they're getting better than you, or like the company is getting better than you. All too often, I will hear bosses talk about how, you know, if they are not hiring up, they're keeping the hires down, right? They're hiring that, like, you know, cheap contractor. Or they're, you know, hiring someone who they're going to have to teach how to do the thing. There builds this frustration that they're the only one in the company who knows how to do the thing, or they're still the ones that are, you know, keeping the ball rolling or whatever it may be. And that's what happens when you are afraid to let someone come in and do the thing that you think you can only do yourself, or that you're going to have to make a real investment to do it. You stay in this place where you are the one that, you know, has all the knowledge and you are just continually teaching. Whenever you can hire up, this thing happens where they are coming in and they're showing you, they're presenting you with a plan, right? They're teaching you all the new things. And then the company is moving faster, maybe not even faster, but just beyond where you can take it in this moment.
100%.
It's a great feeling.
I think it's also thinking about the type of business that you want. So like if you're in the like Paul Jarvis company of one camp, right?
Yes.
Like, you can just do the people on Upwork or the VA or the random, you know, bookkeeper or whatever it is, and you can just be the person. But this conversation is about those of us who want to make a greater impact with our business and scale it in a bigger way. And so it's really just thinking about the type of business that you want. Like I would like my business to exist beyond me. Like, yes. I think it took a long time. I mean, it's called Capablicity. It's my last name. But we're now, I think, almost 14 years later, finally at a point where we have name recognition beyond me. Like, there's people who know my company name who have never met me. And that's a really, and I couldn't have done that without hiring really great, talented people.
Yeah. Oh, I also love that its example is, you know, it is a very personal brand that you have achieved this growth beyond yourself. Okay. I want to go back to this question and get really practical with it of like really when to hire, because I've heard a couple of mindsets around this in the past. I have my own, but I want to know from you when it comes to filling a specific role in your business, like, you know, that a hire is like right then and there. At what point do you recognize that and actually start the process of hiring someone?
So this is a shift. I'll speak to it when I was just me or just one mm-hmm. other person. I knew it when I would start, there's a few signs. When I would start turning down clients or feeling like we didn't have bandwidth. Mm-hmm. When I started feeling like we were really squeezed or overworking. When I felt like we were struggling to deliver on our promises. Those were all signs that we needed help. Or I shouldn't say that. Those are all signs that something needed to change. So I have options, right? I could take less clients and make less money. Could take less clients and charge more. I could take on more clients, charge the same, and bring in other people to deliver. Or I could do what I did is bring in more people to deliver, charge more, and take on more clients and do it all. And so I think that when I started seeing, again, our time, our weekly times is going up, like the amount of time we were billing each week, when I saw that things were starting to slip or things were just feeling a lot of friction. And when I felt like we had to turn down clients, not because they weren't good quality clients, but because we didn't have capacity. That's when I was like, okay, now we need to hire. Now I try to hire more proactively. So right now, we spoke about this the last episode, I hired a publicity director before I needed one. And it's very boss. And a little nerve-wracking. I think since last episode, we've gotten a lot more stable and we're seeing the light where she's like operating more at capacity. But that was something where I'm trying now to hire because we're at a certain level. We have a certain amount of team. We have a certain amount of revenue. I'm trying to anticipate and hire ahead of demand. And so I look at where there's friction. I look at where I don't have capacity. My biggest capacity block right now, or currently still right now, is being able to field new client inquiries. We get anywhere from 3 to 5 new inquiries a day. Probably 1 to 2 of them are quality. And I'd say about one a week is I'll be taking on proposals and wanting to like give a full proposal. When I give a proposal, I read the whole book. So right now, our new publicity director, is fielding all the new people. But guess what? Our clients write more books. So I still have 3 books to read. I've read 3 books in November. It is November 9th. I have read 3 books and given 3 proposals. And that's just for our current clients who want to re-up. So there's still that squeeze a little bit. And so I think that I try to now hire more proactively to give more capacity. But I think in the beginning, again, it's more about cash flow and revenue planning and all those things that you just have to look at where everyone's getting squeezed and looking at what you can do to free up their bandwidth.
Yeah. Mm. One of the things that come up for me in that is that when you're paying attention to what's happening in your business, you sort of develop your own signals, right? Of when it is that you need to hire. And so even you mentioned earlier, looking at like when your entire team is spending more time on things, and then things within yourself as well and your own workload, really sort of finding those for yourself. And I love that you transitioned from being a little more responsive or reactive to being now more proactive, because I think that's one of the things that you are afforded as you grow your company. I think, you know, when you're small, you get to a place and you put it off long enough that, you know, you finally make the decision, you do it, and you get a little better at it as you go. I've also heard, I feel like maybe Kathleen is an advocate of this. I may be putting words in her mouth. Sorry, Kathleen. But I think she's a really big proponent of really waiting to hire. She is not one to take on risks, and she'll be the first to tell you that. Does not have a very high tolerance for risk. She's going to wait until things hurt a little bit more before she finally makes the move to hire. And even to this day, I think to some extent. Me, on the other hand, am on the exact opposite end of the spectrum. If I want to be staffed up really good as early as possible, which really just means I end up getting staffed when I need it, because that's the thing that I also really want to point out here, is it takes so long to hire someone. That if you start when you need it, it's too late.
100%. They don't operate at full capacity for 6 months.
Yeah.
It's the first 90 days, which is like their trial period. They're probably, your employees operate at maybe a 30% capacity. So like they're working full time, but you have part-time work, right?
Yeah.
And so it is a big investment. It does require a lot of patience. So if you already need them, then you need to get them on board real quick. And if you rush that process and rush the training process, it's not going to end well. At least I don't think so.
No.
But I think it also changes for everyone and their, again, their risk tolerance and their capability. So when I was younger, I'm old now. So when I was younger, I could say, all right, I'm going to like burn the midnight oil for a couple months, build up my cash reserves, and then hire. I can't do that anymore. Like I can't work at night. I can read at night, can't work at night. I only work 20 hours a week. I have a kiddo with lots of varying needs. Like I just can't do that. So I also think it's everyone's tolerance and everyone's ability. So like in some ways, yeah, cash flow wise, it would be so lovely if I could just be squeezed for a few months and build up some reserves, feel better, and then hire when I really, really need to. But that just doesn't work with my lifestyle. So I think it's also, I would rather take home less pay or be a little squeezed for a few months and keep my lifestyle as is in terms of my time. So that's the other piece of knowing Kathleen may have a lower tolerance for risk and a higher tolerance for work, whereas I can, risk does not bother me in the slightest, but I will get aggravated if I'm having to work late every night or if I'm trying to take meetings while also at a swim meet or whatever it may be. And so everyone kind of knows their different personalities and their different levels of tolerance.
Yeah. Oh, the second one is definitely me too. Just don't affect my life. So I'll get so angry. But yes, so 6 months for someone to be effective, but also the hiring process is at least 2 months as well. So if you look at, that's like an 8 month lead for bringing really any, and this is from like, unless you are hiring a contractor with a process, and even then, that's like, that can be questionable sometimes. If you are hiring someone to come in and do the thing that you have built for them to do, you're looking at 8 months for them to be in place, actually doing it in, at least effectively, no additional adjectives. Because the hiring process is about 2 months. You're creating your job description. You're putting it out there. You're taking in applications. You're scheduling interviews. They're going to want to put in a 2 week notice likely to the job that they currently have, or, you know, can't they have a wedding that weekend? The weddings in every interview, they're like, I have a wedding next weekend. Always. And so that's like a 2 month process there, and then 6 months to really get them in and get them effective. So think about that whenever you are thinking of when it is time for you to hire. 8 month lead time. Is anyone else eyeballs deep in the return of travel? Conferences, retreats, meetups, which means receipts. I'll be honest, I'd gotten used to not having my wallet overflowing with wads of flimsy paper that I just had to save. Luckily, that's not how we have to live anymore. Not me or you, thanks to FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. In fact, organizing your expenses has never been easier. Take photos of receipts with your phone using the FreshBooks mobile app and then throw the receipt away. You can even do one better by applying receipts directly to clients or invoices when you need. Travel lighter and still do your job. What more can a boss ask for? Try FreshBooks free for 30 days, no credit card required. Go to FreshBooks.com/beingboss to get started today. You talked about this a little bit, but I want to talk about for what you hire. So you talked about like sort of front of house. We have a legit front of house here, or a back office. What you do, what someone else does, what no one is doing. How do you decide what you are hiring your next person for?
I think it goes back to the looking at what everyone is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year, sometimes every 6 months, but usually just every year, we have everyone make a list of everything they do on a regular basis. And we will say, like, Do you want to do more of it, less of it, stop doing it, anything you want to start doing, all those things. So we take a look at that. And so if there's things where people are like, I would like to stop doing this, I'll look for patterns. There's also, I think we mentioned this in the last interview, I use Clockwork by Mike Michalowicz. And Clockwork basically advocates for everyone having a primary role, every role having a primary job function, calls it the one for your pocket, the one for your back pocket, as well as a company's queen bee role. What is the thing that your company must do or it will suffer? If your company can do only one thing, and don't just, for those of you listening, don't answer it, actually take the steps in the book. We redo our queen bee role probably every 2 years with the whole group. We all do it as a team. And so for us, our queen bee role is securing media coverage. I can stop doing sales because if we're securing media coverage, clients will find us. They'll say, how did that author get on the Today Show? How did that author get on NPR? And they'll come find us. So securing media coverage is our queen bee role. So that is the first thing I hire for. If that is suffering, or if a queen bee role is suffering, that's the first thing I'll hire for. If the queen bee role is stable, I'll look at everyone else's primary roles and look at how those are suffering. So that's how I prioritize the hiring. And also, if any of our team members are not in their zones of genius, if any of our team members are doing things that they're not really good at, right? So in the beginning, we had the role was marketing and events. The marketing person did all the events. It made sense. There's lots of cross promotion and cross things there. However, our two marketing people, events wasn't their strong suit. They could do it, but it's very detail oriented, lots of little things, lots of follow through. It wasn't in their zones of genius. So we hired an events person. We hired a dedicated events person who all these little details and checklists and all these things is in her zone of genius. And so that's kind of how I drilled down. I look at what's the queen bee role? Is that supported? The second is what's everyone's primary role? Are they all doing that to the best of their capability, or do they need support, or do we need additional help? And then the final step is everyone is role, it's role alignment. Is everyone in their zones of genius doing work that they find valuable, doing work that they enjoy? And if not, can I take the two or three things that people aren't enjoying, and is there any common thread that could create a unified role?
Yeah, this. You did it. That's pretty much what we do as well. And I will say, if you are a solopreneur and you want to know what this looks like literally sitting down and writing out everything that you do. So I like to go through, you know, the past month of to-dos, like my task list. What are all the things that I did? I did marketing. I wrote blog posts. I, you know, XYZ, whatever those things are. And then I always go through and, you know, I will highlight in one color everything that I love doing and that, you know, supports that queen bee role and what it is that, you know, I'm doing, I can do best, what my core genius is, all of those things. And then in another color, I will highlight like what I would love to never do again. And then I take those, what I would love to never do again, and anything that's in the middle, and see if I can't create a job out of it. Like, is the thing that I hate doing all of the marketing stuff? Well, then I probably need a marketer. Is it all, you know, related to copywriting? Then maybe I just need a copywriter or whatever it may be. You can do that literally just for yourself as well. And then scale it, as Dana explained, for everyone on your entire team to figure out what role needs to be filled next in your business. This is also really important to do, as opposed to just sort of trusting your gut as to what you kind of feel an itch for in this moment, or maybe because, you know, your friend hired an event planner for this thing. That may not be a social media manager. How about that one? That's always the hot one. But if that's not what your business needs in this moment, then that, like, you know, gut call you're making is not going to serve you and your long-term growth goals. So love that.
Well, and it goes back to being a little more creative too. So like this research assistant role that we hired for earlier this year, that's a new role. And it came out of the team members talking about what creates friction. And the friction was coming out of when the campaigns weren't going well, meaning they would pitch their contacts, pitch their lists. If they didn't get the responses that they wanted, going back to the well to find new contacts or find new people or find other outlets, that was the friction. Additionally, we're creative folks, so we don't like to just go to the same people all the time. Every new client, we try to think of something, a new angle, a new hook, something we could do differently. That also requires finding those people and research. So again, the research piece came out of this need of multiple people saying, I find it hard. I find it difficult when the campaign isn't going well and I have to go find podcasts. I have to go find, track down someone's contact information. When the editor of the book section of the New York Times leaves, they announce the new person, but we don't have their email and we have to find it. That slows people down. I also had our marketing people were fielding inbound requests from influencers. You know, everyone's a social media influencer now. So every, Jane and John and Jim want a free book. And so getting those inbound requests, finding, do they get engagement? Do they have a following? Is it a real following or is it bots? You know, all of those things takes time. So we didn't have this role before, but I saw these common threads of like, oh, we need someone who can like be an online detective, basically, right? Find email addresses, see if people are legit, find new podcasts that make sense. And so that's how this role sprung out of. So I think it's not just saying, I need a social media manager, finding out what do you actually want them to do? Like what functions do you need them to do? And then you can create a role around that. It could be, maybe you actually just need a content creator, not a marketer. Maybe you know how to market and you're fine to schedule, hashtag, optimize, whatever, but you don't want to be in Canva making stuff or you don't want to be writing captions. So thinking actually about what you don't want to do and then create the role around that versus saying, I just need an assistant. I just need this and get a little creative.
Yeah. Yes. All of that. So if anyone needs help with this, here comes a plug. I like to use, there's a section in CEO Day Kit called your dream job.
Yep.
Is that what it's called?
Your ideal day. Ideal day.
No, that's one, but there's also your dream job. Oh my God, everybody. I'm literally going to have to go look this up. I'm obviously an awful marketer. I don't even know how to talk about my own thing. There is a section in CEO Day Kit that is called, we're about to see if I got it right or not, crafting your dream job. That's it. I use this step in CEO Day Kit. I literally do have so many of these printed out. I just can't remember what it's called. Where I will sit down, I will do this exercise. I will also get my members of my team to do this as well. And it fills a lot of those questions of what are you great at? What do you feel most competent doing? What would you like to never do again? So it sort of has the structure for asking those questions and getting those answers and then writing out all those roles. So if anyone would like a nice worksheet for that, CEO Day Kit, beingboss.club/CEO is where you can get that. And I still use that every single time I am thinking about making, especially a new like sort of higher tier hire. How about that? Because I also just do a lot of like lower tier hires these days too. Okay. Next question for you. And this might have to wrap up with this question. So funny. We'll have to do, may have to do like a follow-up of this to
we
get
just
into
need
this
like
culture
another,
piece.
Like mini, so mini series.
Dana and Emily sort of spin-off show about hiring, because I do want to talk to you too eventually about company culture, because that's so important. But we've talked about when to hire. We've talked about what to hire for. I want to talk for a moment about how to figure out who was the right fit, and not just for a role, but also for your business. So you figured out who it is or who you need. You've been doing interviews. Maybe you have a couple really great candidates. What are some of the things that you look for to get the right person in the job?
I think we have to talk about culture at that point, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, you have to figure out what are, we do the, another plug for CEO Day Kit, knowing your values.
Oh, yes.
So I have personal values, but I have company values, creativity, consistency, and community. Three C's, easier to remember. And so that's really the first piece, is knowing what your company values, knowing what your culture is, so that the people can come in and embody that or fit in well. I've stopped hiring for hard skills. I really believe that a lot of these hard skills can be taught. Don't know how to use Canva? I can teach you that. Don't know how to use Buffer or Business Suite, whatever. Like, I can teach you all that. I'm less concerned with that. Soft skills are harder to teach. And I don't know that curiosity is possible to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing I look for is, are they curious? Do they like learning? Are they like interested in learning new things? Are they curious? If they're not, it's going to be really incredibly hard to train them or teach them. And because they'll never look for the answer themselves, they'll never think like, oh, I wonder if there's another way to do this. Or I wonder why we do it this way. They'll never wonder. And so if they're not curious, I have a few questions that I ask that you can kind of gauge, but I also gauge it in the kinds of questions they ask me at the end of the interview. If they ask me really good, interesting questions that don't have to do with the job at all, just like, how'd you get into this industry? What are you finding to be like challenges in the industry? How has your business changed? The curiosity piece is always something they need. If they're not curious, if they don't ask questions, they're done. At the end of the interview, I just know that that's not a good fit. And then the second piece is, how do they embody our company values? So are they active in the community, right? If they're in publishing, like, are they going to bookstores? Are they going to author signings? Are they members of organizations? Creativity, I'll always ask about like a camp, something they've done that they're really proud of, or a way they've thought outside the box that they, you know, that was really effective. And then consistency, a lot has to do with their resume. I look at, do they keep jobs? Do they bounce around a lot? So it's not just like, were they working? Just like, are they consistently working? Did they work there for a year? All of those things. And so that's the company values piece. And then some of it is gut feeling and practice. You might not get it right the first few hires, but once you do have a team, the other nice thing is there's a panel of interviewers. So you have many people interviewing them, and we can talk about them. So this last round, I was the second interviewer. I wasn't the primary interviewer because they weren't my direct reports. So Haley, it was her direct report. So she interviewed them, and I just came in for the final three, and me, her, and our publicity manager discussed those last three for each job. So I think we tend to focus, and I think this is going back to questions about diversity and inclusion and all of these things, right? We used to be like, okay, do they have industry experience? Do they have, did they go to a four-year college? What's their GPA? I actually don't care anymore. I really don't care. I care. They have to write a cover letter so I can see that they can write. That's that's also possible, but more challenging to train on. And I have little tests that to see if they follow instructions, goes back to the consistency piece. So this last round, the instructions in LinkedIn, we posted on LinkedIn, and the instructions were, send a cover letter and resume to this email address with the last book the last great book you read as the subject. So anyone who just hit that apply on LinkedIn button, not a quality candidate because they can't follow instructions. So incorporating some of these things into the actual application process. So if you value creativity, asking them a question as part of the application process that would express their creativity. If you value, what are your company values?
So at Almanac, we have experience, wonder, and collaboration.
So even in the process, like, of collaboration, like, is there a way in the application process that they can demonstrate this, demonstrate wonder? What's a thing what you've always been curious about, and have you taken steps to find out? Something that will just filter, that will filter some of these things. If they're put off by these questions, then they're not the right fit for you. So I try to get as much filtering done in that process while also having a broad and inclusive application process. Because again, the issues of getting diverse folks into your organization is that if you're just going to people you know, going to avenues that you're familiar with, you're going to just hire more people like you. So if you go as broadly as possible, you have the chance to get different types of people and diverse thinkers into your organization. But hopefully they have similar values with the they align with the company's values.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that you can teach the skills, which is right. But it's the personality. So that gut feeling you get whenever you talk to people, whenever you like are engaging with them, and also making sure that they reflect those company values back to you, because they are going to be responsible for upholding them within your organization. And then also just, I want to reiterate this idea of you're still going to get it wrong sometimes too.
Oh, 100%. You're getting their best version. Like, people can just be really great actors.
Yeah.
People can be really, they could just be really great at performing. But that's why you ask these questions that kind of get at the root of it. Like, mm-hmm. Again, how can they demonstrate curiosity in a way that can't be faked? And that if you're curious about stuff, it's going to make your job so much easier. Whereas they might lie about their ability to code, right? They might say like, oh, I can code. And you find, no, you can, drag and drop on Squarespace. That's not coding, but you can teach that, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's also a little bit, we can get woo here. So there's this piece about looking for certain, asking certain questions, gathering all that data. But I also pay a lot of attention to my intuition. So things like my body language. If I find myself leaning forward towards the computer or a virtual company, if I find myself leaning towards the computer, that's a good sign. If I find myself backing away, that's a sign that it's a no-go. I do draw tarot cards sometimes throughout the interview. I'll just throw some cards and look at them and reflect on them later. Sometimes I'll draw a card after to just get a sense of what I really feel about them. But that's the other thing I started doing, was that I used to squeeze these interviews in between things. And I really try to have like a one day of interviews with 15-minute breaks in between, so I can like process what just happened and process how I feel about it. Because yeah, otherwise you just get back into your day and you don't really like know how you feel. So I also think just paying attention to your body language. If you find yourself crossing your arms, leaning away, like your body's like, get out of here, you can take that as a sign that's probably not a good fit.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Dana, this has been such a treat. I've loved a little peek into this process for you, how it is that you decide when to and what you're going to be, like what the role is going to be, and even a little bit into who it is that that is going to fill that role. I would love to have you come back to talk about company culture.
I feel like we can just have like hiring, like every Friday, we just drop an episode about hiring.
Hiring Friday.
Hiring happy hour.
Right? I love it. I think there's definitely some room to have several conversations about this, because this really is, taking it to the next level of being boss and literally moving into that boss role, and is one that a lot of newbies struggle with. But I also know people, I do just want to say that I know people who have been 10, 15 years in business, who have had teams, who have had employees, still struggle with the process of really figuring out what the next role should be. Like, what is really going to be the best new role for their business? Still like getting the right person in, all of those things. This is something that really is, once you start hiring, it is a part of what you do. Until you move out of the role of being boss in the company that you're building. So I appreciate you coming and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you. It's been fun. Always a pleasure to chat.
Perfect. Then why don't you tell everyone where it is they can find you around the internets?
My company is Kaye Publicity, kaye publicity.com. And if you're an author looking to increase your sales and grow your readership, you can visit yourbreakoutbook.com.
And last but not least, what's making you feel most boss?
I today felt really boss. All I had to do, the only two things on my to-do list were to read and review our Q3 P&Ls and budgets and balance sheets and adjust our forecast. So the two things, the creative artsy side of reading, and then also the CEO or CFO role of reviewing our worksheets. And I did it at a really cute cafe.
Perfect. Oh, then you did it right.
Indeed.
Totally right. Perfect. Thanks, Dana. This has been a treat.
Thank you.
All right, boss, because you're here, I know you want to be a better creative business owner, which means I've got something for you. Each week, the team at Being Boss is scouring the news, the best entrepreneurial publications, and updates and releases of the apps and tools that run our businesses, and is curating it all into a weekly email that delivers the must-know tips and tactics in the realms of mindset, money, and productivity. This email is called Brewed. We brew it up for you each week to give you the insight you need to make decisions and move forward in your creative business. Check it out now and sign up for yourself at beingboss.club/brewed. That's beingboss.club/BREWED. Now, until next time, do the work, be boss. Yeah.